David Stokes in for Don Crow in the final stretch today, hour three on WAVA. Daniel Pipes is the president of the Middle East Forum. Wonderful site. I have been an aficionado for a long time. His columns appear variously. His website is danielpipes.org. He's a PhD from Harvard in history and all kinds of creds. He wrote a piece that's in today's National Review Online, Don't Put Terrorists on Trial, having to do with Abu Qatala. And Daniel, you make the, first of all, welcome to the broadcast. And second of all,
Thank you, David. You
make the point that this takes us back, and we've been trending this way for a long time, to basically a pre-9/11 approach to the criminalization of terrorists.
Right. In the old days, in the bad old days, 1990s, the U.S. government would hunt down terrorists, bring them to the United States, give them lawyers, put them in jail, try them, and that was that. Then on the very evening of 9/11, George Bush said, we have a war against terrorism. He said, well, that's a not very felicitous phrasing, but what he meant by it is it's a war. This is no longer about criminality. It's about war. We're at war. It's a very different concept. And these are enemy soldiers out there. Well, in the 13 years since then, we've gone back to the criminal model, the paradigm. And so instead of attacking in Benghazi 2 years ago, we've been collecting forensic evidence, and we brought this guy over, and he's now got a halal food diet, and he's got his Miranda rights, he's got his court-appointed lawyer. And, you know, even if he does get put away for life, good, what difference does it make? The whole command and control structure is there, the funding is there, the ideological sources are there, the terrorist network is there. Nothing basically has changed. So we can't win, even if he gets put away. We can't win, and he might not even be put away. He might be back on the streets of Benghazi before too long.
Even those of us who have regularly talked about the concept of war on terror as misguided, because you can't have a war against, like, blitzkrieg or you know, something like that. It's a methodology, not necessarily an ideology. His use of the word war was right on the button, and we've not only lost the word terror, we've lost the word war in this. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Yeah, to me, that exactly. I agree with you. The word terror was always misconceived. Mm-hmm. It was a war on radical Islam. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's important to get right. We got that wrong. But at least the war part was right, and now that, too, is gone. So if I were to paraphrase it, it's now a criminal investigation into radical extremism. That would be what the U.S. government is up to.
Now,
that's not going to win.
When President Obama at first tried to, a while back, a few years ago, they finally tried to start making the move away from Guantanamo and bringing people to New York, there was an outcry, not in my backyard, not in my neighborhood, that kind of thing, and they backpedaled pretty quickly. There doesn't seem to be the same kind of public outcry. I'm not living in New York at the time. I used to live in that area, but has everybody just moved on?
There was a case about 3-4 years ago of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who
right.
was to be brought to New York, and that was shot down by opposition. This one just happened, and he turned up. There was no public discussion. And this is now 2 weeks ago, and there has been no public discussion. Yeah, perhaps because he never was in Guantanamo. He was brought directly from Benghazi to New York City. So the whole Guantanamo issue did not get raised in the Abu Qatala case. In contrast, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, remember, serves, was in Guantanamo. Yeah, the whole thing is just falling apart bit by bit. And the natural expectation is that we'll get hit once again very hard by some terrorist enterprise. Right. And then we'll once again wake up to it. And then we'll once again be on our guard and vigilant, and therefore there won't be further attacks, and then the wheel will turn again. We're seeing it also in New York. Mm-hmm. New York has had the outstanding anti-terrorist police force. The NYPD has been outstanding. Mm-hmm. And in the last few months, the new mayor, Bill de Blasio, is on taking it apart, is dismantling it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's more likely now that we'll see terrorism than in the past 13 years. And that will lead to new vigilance. It's frustrating.
It is extremely.
Lessons would be learned.
It is extremely frustrating. And I think, aren't we witnessing the difference between the politics of Guantanamo and the politics of Benghazi? There is Guantanamo was conflicted to an extent, but Benghazi is a different kind of problem for this administration.
Yes, indeed. But I think the more fundamental point is we never really figured out what to do with enemy combatants who are not wearing uniforms. If you're fighting a regular force and they have titles and they're working for a government, you know, you have POW camps and you know what to do with them. But these people, the crew that was rounded up of Islamists after 9/11 and put in Guantanamo, they didn't fit. You know, who are they? What is, you know, nobody sent them exactly. They're from all over the world. Their common element is an ideology, not a uniform. And this legal, philosophical, political dimension was never solved, and we're now paying the price for this anomalous Guantanamo situation.
So this is an adversarial proceeding. That's what a trial is. He's got an attorney, court appointed, et cetera. And I mean, when we look at this thing, it looks like a slam dunk. But just because it is a trial and because it's not a mock trial, there is a possibility, slim maybe, I don't know, there is a possibility this guy could be acquitted or at least found guilty of lesser charges. And that's a really scary...
Oh, indeed. Yeah. Here's my article where I paraphrase the New York Times. It says it'll be particularly challenging to convict him because of circumstances of the attack, which took place in the midst of the Civil War and in a country brimming with hostility to the United States, where concerns about security meant that U.S. law investigators had to wait for weeks to go to the crime scenes to collect evidence, and the prosecution depends on testimony from Libyan witnesses brought over to the United States who may well falter under cross-examination. In short, there are lots of pitfalls. This is not a slam dunk.
Not at all. Hey, we're talking with Daniel Pipes. We're going to take a quick break here and continue our conversation talking about his piece, Don't Put Terrorists on Trial. It's at National Review Online today, and we'll range into some related stuff in a moment. David Stokes in for Don Crow. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've heard him on Leno. This is your chance to hear the man who makes America laugh, Michael Jr., in one fun-filled Friday night comedy performance, July 19th, 9 p.m., at the Omni Shoreham Hotel Ballroom in Washington, D.C.
I'm doing a show at a comedy club in the South, and I get heckled from this guy in the back of the room with more twang than I can explain. You ever hear somebody with so much twang it sounds like they speak in banjo? You just talk to him, hey man, how you? What you gonna do? You gonna go around that gun, burn down, down, burn down, down, burn down, burn down, burn down, burn down, burn down, burn down. You just stop, your foot starts stumping. You're like, what is going on? How come I can't control this?
Michael Jr.'s storytelling and humor is filled with faith and is always family friendly. Tickets are $20, general admission, and proceeds support church planting around the world. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit MichaelJr.com. That's MichaelJr.com.
Napa Know-How!
Napa supports the Intrepid Fallen Heroes Fund, and this month we're making it easy for you to show your support too. Make any $25 purchase, and you'll receive a free Napa racing cap. For every cap we give out, we'll donate a dollar to the Intrepid Fallen Heroes Fund, supporting those who serve you. That's Napa Know-How. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Offer expires 7/31/14.
It's long, over 1,000 chapters, over 30,000 verses. No wonder so many of us have never read it cover to cover. Want to do it? Want to read the entire Bible? Start today at BibleStudyTools.com. BibleStudyTools.com includes Bible in a Year, an interactive plan for reading, learning, and understanding the Bible. Deepen your faith and impact your walk with God one day at a time. Bible in a Year, just one of the new interactive Bible study tools at BibleStudyTools.com.
Every day, we are surrounded by the invisible forces of good and evil. But what does that really mean? In his new book, Unseen, Pastor Jack Graham challenges the popular opinion about the supernatural world and uses biblical truth to show how God provides protection and provision for what lies ahead. Enter to win a free copy of Unseen online at WAVA.com. Keyword contest. Our grand prize winner will also receive the Invisible DVD series. That's WAVA.com keyword contest.
They say the best things in life are free. Because we, your local radio broadcasters, have always entertained and informed at no cost to the community. When tragedy strikes, radio is there, even when others are not. We bring you talk, news, and music, all aimed to engage, inform, and motivate, with one goal, serving the public. The local broadcasters of radio, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
DanielPipes.org offers an archive of Daniel's work, an opportunity to sign up to receive emails of his current writings. I received them. 69 million page visits. It's the Internet's most accessed source of specialized information on the Middle East and Muslim history as well. Daniel, the host of his show, I'm sitting in for him today. He's away. Don Crow had a political cartoon on his Facebook page, and I popped it on mine, too. It's a four frames, and the first one has says Hamas attacks Israel, has rockets going to Israel. Second frame is Hamas attacks Israel. Third frame, Hamas attacks Israel. And the fourth frame, Israel defends itself. There's a rocket going the other way, and a reporter says Israel attacked Gaza today. And that's humorous but true. Unpack what's going on over there for us, if you don't mind a little bit.
Okay. First the context. The Middle East is aflame. Syria and Iraq hardly exist as states anymore. Mm-hmm. Libya is an anarchy and so forth. There are 160,000 estimated deaths in Syria over the last 3 years, so lots and lots of major troubles. Israel has emerged as the singular state of the region that is democratic, modern, rule of law, high tech, high culture, and so forth. It is ever more different from its neighbors.
That's right.
It has tried at length to disengage itself from its immediate neighbors, and further neighbors too, but specifically the Palestinians, and done so some 20 years ago by offering them territory and autonomy, mm-hmm. On the hopes that that would lead to the Palestinians saying, well, thank you, we don't leave you alone, we've got our own garden to tend. But in fact, not finding that at all, finding the reverse, which is the Palestinians saying, thank you, we'll take this, and now we want more. We want Jerusalem, we want Haifa, we want Tel Aviv. Their appetite grew with eating. Mm-hmm. And despite the enormous disparity in power, symbolized by the Israeli Air Force versus rockets, symbolized by Iron Dome, which is this extraordinary protective missile shield versus these primitive unguided rockets. The Palestinians, in the form of Hamas, a U.S.-designated terrorist group that controls the Gaza Strip, is fighting Israel. Now, you might ask why. Well, they can't win. Hamas can't win. They're doing it because there are lots and lots of ancillary benefits to Hamas, mm-hmm. in terms of its own population and its funding and its ideological stature and the pressure it puts on Israel around the world and mm-hmm. Pressure puts on the Egyptian government and so on and so on. And Hamas is showing a lot of zeal in keeping the fighting going, even though it's losing badly. And one wonders where exactly this is going to end up. The Israelis are considering a ground attack because there's only so much you can do from the air. The missiles just keep coming. The rockets and missiles just keep coming. They're, I think, on the order of 800 now in something over a week, about 100 a day. The Israelis are feeling very frustrated. They can't stop this. But on the other hand, the Israelis are feeling quite good because there have been no fatalities from these rockets. It's costing money. It's disrupting life. People have to run to shelters. But it actually hasn't caused any real damage, neither to property or to life. So it is. I think, in some ways, a modern kind of war. And the sides are very lopsided. It's really about politics. High tech is playing an ever greater role. I think, whereas this is not all that important in the long-term evolution of Israeli-Palestinian relations, I think it's very important in terms of the modern battlefield and how it's changing.
Well, you know, Vietnam was called the living room war, and part of that meant that as it came into the living room, as it was graphically reported in a way that visually that no war had been reported before because of various censors and so forth, and it had an impact on public opinion here in this country. And I know we are not the major player in the situation over there, but how much of this is designed for the American viewer? I'm talking about on the Palestinian side.
Well, the Palestinians aren't so much using television in the sense of Vietnam and having graphic images as they are using it to say, look, they claim 170 deaths or so, 180 deaths, so who knows what the real number is, but they're saying that all these deaths, women, children, the Israelis are barbarians. But then when one comes back to that that cartoon you start us off with, that the Israelis are protecting themselves. But the Palestinians, the Hamas leadership, is saying, no, they're not protecting themselves. We are under occupation. We are defending ourselves. It reaches a certain point of absurdity that they are saying this, and they do have a significant following, not in this country terribly much, but around the world. The one poll I've seen by Rasmussen shows roughly a 3-to-1 Israel to Palestinian edge in terms of approval and sympathy, which is lower than usual. Israel usually has a 5-6-to-1 ratio, but still pretty good from Israel's point of view.
But it is an attrition to a certain extent, and I think you mentioned in one of your pieces in the Christian Science Monitor that it talks about the movement's popularity is skyrocketing in some places.
No, not really. No, that wasn't me. I didn't write the Christian Science Monitor. No. In fact, what has been interesting is the reluctance and resistance towards Hamas. I just watched an Egyptian television program where the television personality said, Egyptian army, you should join the Israelis in destroying Hamas. Now, that's something of an outlier, but there's a lot of antagonism, especially in Egypt, towards Hamas, which is seen as the little cousin of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is much despised in Egypt these days. You'll find in Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and so forth, many countries you'll see, because of the large-scale fighting that's taking place. I mentioned Syria and Iraq earlier. That's the real story these days. That's where people's real passions are. Historically, it was the Arab-Israeli conflict to divide the Middle East. Today, it's rather secondary, maybe even tertiary, to the division between Islamists and non-Islamists, different kinds of Islamists, Shiites and Sunnis. There's a much broader conflagration that's underway. And this is rather small. So, no, I don't see that this is turning opinion against Israel particularly. Good. Yeah, in Europe, there are demonstrations, places like Frankfurt and The Hague, yeah. Mm-hmm. But in the Middle East, I have yet to hear of any kind of demonstration. People's minds are on much bigger issues than this.
Mm-hmm. Let's, for 1 minute, we have 1 minute left, go back to the first topic, your piece, Don't Put Terrorists on Trial. Tell us, how long is this thing going to drag out, this trial, do you think? Do you have any way of knowing that?
No, I don't, but I expect from the excerpt I just read you, the paraphrase I just read you, it's going to be months.
Yeah.
It's a complex thing. There, you're going to have various people coming in, or various detectives and the like coming in. But yeah, it's just crazy because this is a battlefield. You don't have detectives on a battlefield,
right.
But now you do. And
yeah.
They come in weeks later. I don't know. I'm not confident that this will end up in a conviction. This could be one large fiasco costing a fair amount of money and making the U.S. government look like it's a fool for this attempt.
And not making us any safer in the long run or the short run.
No, even if, well, and that's my basic point, is that even if he is convicted, this is a very marginal improvement over his being let loose, because he's just one foot soldier, basically, in an army.
Daniel Pipes is the president of Middle East Forum. Daniel, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the invitation, David.
Welcome.